evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, July 20th, 2017. SPLM-IO commander in Kejikeji says his troops are ready for action.
I have the capacity not only to defend Kejikeji, but the capacity even to defend part of the eastern Equatoria, and as well as we can even proceed to Juba, because our motive is to go and change the government of Juba.
And South Sudan Army spokesman dismisses the SPLM-IO threats.
We know that they do not have the numerical strength that they are claiming to be having. Secondly, they don't have the ability. They even have not been able to capture any of the major towns that we have in Yei River State, let alone marching on Juba.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But we first go to Kampala, where Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni met today with President Salva Kiir and some members of the former SPLM political detainees. In South Sudan in Focus obtained a photo showing Rebecca Nyandeng, Oya Edenga Jack, John Luke and Dengalor meeting with President Kiir in the presence of President Museveni. South Sudan in Focus contacted Nyandeng's office for comments, but we were told to wait until the meeting is over. It is not immediately clear what President Kiir is discussing with the four members of the former detainees. This is the first time President Kiir is meeting with the former detainees since fighting broke out in Juba between forces loyal to former first Vice President Riek Machar and President Kiir's bodyguards in July last year. South Sudan in Focus will bring you details of the meeting in tomorrow's broadcast. Imatong state officials say hundreds of SPLA-IO forces are advancing towards Kapoita State, and they have killed two policemen and injured several others. The rebels ambushed a police vehicle heading towards South Sudan-Uganda border Tuesday night. Imatong state governor says the attack violates the ceasefire declared by President Salva Kiir recently. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Eyewitnesses say a police escort vehicle carrying a dozen armed police officers came under attack in Havurere village of the Kiala Payam along the Torit Kapweta road about 8 o'clock Tuesday night. Two policemen were killed on the spot and scores of others were wounded, including a businessman. Police officer Alimu Robert Kute survived the attack. Speaking in Arabic, he says the police could not defend themselves against the heavy gunfire.
It was difficult even to know how one got wounded. The shooting was too much. We tried to return fire, but they sprayed a lot of bullets towards us. We were also few compared to their number.
Somalia businessman James Abur was shot in his right arm.
Unfortunately, I was on the first. I was sitting with the driver and other policemen were sitting on top. So on the way, unfortunately they have started. The gunmen started shooting. So we never saved it. So the car was being backed by the driver to another tree. So we get off of it. Even we never unlocked the doors. So we jumped.
A police officer, Paul William, was shot in his left arm.
What happened on the road, as you can see from my injury, was very bad. The people who attacked us were very many. I cannot even say they covered meters, but they covered a distance of about a kilometer. And they could have been about three brigades.
Imatong State Governor Tobiolo Alberio Oromo accused SPLA-IO rebels allied to former first Vice President Riek Machar of carrying out the attack.
Between Torit and Kiala, they attack our police and they kill our police. And this police were asked by one of the Somalia whom this vehicle spoiled on Kapwera Road. And when this police were given to escort to him because it was going to be night, escort him to go and pull this vehicle. So immediately they attack our police and they kill our police, burn the vehicle. That is aggression. Why did we leave them a peaceful passage? Okay, we have powers. But we allow them a free passage to go.
Governor Oromo says if authorities attack rebel forces, the international community will accuse them of violating the ceasefire. For the past several days, eyewitnesses and state officials say hundreds and possibly thousands of SPLA-IO rebels allied to former first Vice President Riek Machar have been crossing into the area formerly called Eastern Equatoria State from the former Central Equatoria State. They say the rebels are accompanied by women and children and appear to be heading to Kapweta State near the border with Kenya. Oromo says despite the provocation, government forces will not attack the rebels in order to prevent the loss of innocent lives.
We will not react. No, we send our vehicles to bring the dead bodies. This is what is going on. As a government, we shall react if we are attacked. And I have powers to order for the forces to move and get them wherever they are. But those women with children, they are not a part of that problem. We have to protect the future of those innocent people. You know, the innocent people who are moving with them.
On several previous occasions, Governor Oromo has denied that rebel forces have been operating in Imotong State. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Yei, where SPLA-IO commander loyal to Riek Machar claims he controls 75% of Kejikeji County in Yei River State. Brigadier General Moses Lokujo says his troops are prepared to defend and protect thousands of civilians in the territories under their control. Simon Peter Apiku reports for VOA from Kajukeji. The rebel commander says his group will not negotiate with the government of President Salva Kiir as long as former first Vice President Riek Machar remains under house arrest in South Africa.
SPLA-IO forces loyal to Machar battled government forces in Kajukeji in February. Brigadier General Moses Lokujo says repeated provocations by government forces in Kajukeji forced his troops to attack the town on several occasions. General Lokujo says families who fled the area because of abuses by government soldiers and proxy militias are gradually returning to their homes and farms in Kajukeji.
The people here in our control area is 100% secure because the security is 100%. You can't hear a non-gunman.
SPLA-IO says about 18,000 people, most of whom are IDPs from Yei, Morobo, Lanya, Wonduruba and Juba, are in areas under their control. Colonel Lotole Kenyi, a senior SPLA-IO officer in Kajukeji, says civilians living in territories under their control should not fear attacks from government soldiers stationed in Kajukeji town.
If they try to come out, we just push them back. That is why these days we did have a normal situation.
The SPLA-IO commander in Kajukeji says he has not received orders to attack the government garrison in Kajukeji, but if ordered to do so, he has enough soldiers to do the job.
I have the capacity not only to defend Kajukeji, but the capacity even to defend part of the Eastern Equatoria, and as well as we can even proceed to Juba, because our motive is to go and change the government of Juba, which kills our people.
Leah Grace, a mother of four, says she gave up a career as a clinical officer working for international governmental organizations to join the SPLA-IO and help defend her village against attacks by government troops.
The current government of Salva Kiir does not value, actually, the human life as important thing. If they mean, like, to fight, instead of fighting the fellow men who put on uniforms like them, holding guns, they go and instead destroy the civilians, the innocent civilians. And they don't pay respect even to women. They misbehave by either raping them or harassing them in any other way. They also abuse children by killing them.
General Lokujo says he hears what he calls heartbreaking stories from civilians who are fleeing government-held territories.
The issue they tell us is the government troops normally kill them, they rob them, they rape them, and also their belongings are taken, they are harassed, Even these are human abuses. That's why they flee. They want their lives to be secure.
General Lokujo says there is a looming food shortage in camps for internally displaced persons in areas under his control. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Kajukeji.
A South Sudanese army spokesman says he is dismissing claims that forces loyal to rebel leader Riek Machar are controlling large parts of Kajukeji in Yei River State. Lul Roy Kong says the rebels only control a small portion of the territory in Kajukeji. Nabil Biajo has more for VOA from Juba.
Military spokesman Lul Roy Kwang admits the SPLA in opposition under the leadership of former vice president controls some areas of Kajukeji, but he says it's a very limited presence in the area.
They are present at a place called Kirwa, southwest of Kajukeji, near Mangalatoria, where they are known for crossing into Uganda to go and steal food. We know that they also have a small presence at a place called Korkaya. And then there are the bushes, like any other bandits who are roaming around in the countryside. And they are also taking advantage of the forest that we have. It does not constitute 4 or 5% of the area.
Kong dismisses rebel claims that they are providing security to civilians who prefer to remain in rebel-controlled areas of Kajukeji.
We do not have IDPs in rebel-controlled areas. That's not completely correct. We know that we have South Sudanese refugees who crossed over to Uganda. They are mostly in Mangalatoria, on the Ugandan side of the border. So it's just another propaganda to fool the whole world that they have an area under their control with civilians.
Kwong disputes claims made by the rebels that their force is large enough to capture more South Sudanese towns.
We know that they do not have the numerical strength that they are claiming to be having. Secondly, they don't have the ability. They even have not been able to capture any of the major towns that we have in Yei River State, let alone marching on Juba.
Alfred Taban, who was recently appointed by the SPLMIO, Taban Dengai faction, as a member of parliament representing Kajukeji in the National Assembly, says the SPLMIO and government must talk to each other and find a peaceful settlement for the sake of the citizens in Kajukeji.
IGAD, which negotiated the peace agreement, has said it is going to revitalize this process. And now this implementation cannot proceed if the two sides are not willing to talk to each other. So this is really regrettable. The two sides should really speak to one another and find out how the peace agreement can be revitalized.
Taban says it doesn't matter how much area the government or the rebels control in Kajukeji.
As a citizen of Kajukeji, I just want the place to be peaceful so that the citizens can return to their homes and farms.
Kwong says the SPLAIO operating in Kajukeji and around parts of Yei River State must join the recent peace agreement signed in Yei by the government in Juba and a rebel faction in the area. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biajo in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, health workers are vaccinating children in Yei. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's the most annoying question that people ask you?
The most annoying question to me that people do ask is when you ask about my clan, like when I went for an interview and you asked which tribe are you. So it is so annoying.
How was your night? I actually feel, instead of thinking about something that is already passed, why don't you ask me or maybe wish me something about the morning, maybe good morning or something like that. It will be better.
The most annoying question people ask me is when people ask me why I am who I am. Because I did not make a decision to be who I am. So I think that's the most annoying question people ask me.
The question that I don't like is that they ask me, why are you big? I'm not big because of my reason. I just grew up big like this.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The JMAC Chairman Festus Mohai and Assistant Secretary General for UN Peacekeeping Operations Al-Ghassim Wani briefed UN Security Council members in New York today on the latest developments in South Sudan. VOA's United Nations correspondent Margaret Bashir tells South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam that Mohai told the UN Security Council via a satellite from Juba after visiting several locations in the country and after meeting the former first Vice President Riek Machar in South Africa.
He's been doing a lot of traveling and talking. He also mentioned that he's met with Riek Machar, the former Vice President, and he told him to renounce violence, declare a unilateral ceasefire, and participate in this national dialogue that they're trying to get started. He said Machar declined to do so, and he demanded a new political process by the region that should be held outside South Sudan, and he wants a negotiated ceasefire.
Was anyone else there speaking and briefing the UNSC today?
We also heard today from the Assistant Secretary General for UN Peacekeeping, Al-Ghassim Wayne. He spoke about the security situation in the country. He said fighting has continued, despite the fact that now it's the rainy season when fighting usually subsides, and despite the fact that President Salva Kiir declared a universal ceasefire in May. He said that's effectively been ignored and that they need an effective and credible ceasefire. Some council members, including Ethiopia, pointed to the recent escalation in Upper Nile and the declaration of state of emergency in four states to express their concern about the deterioration of the security situation in the country and the terrible effect it's been having on civilians.
Did it seem like either Mohai or Al-Ghassim Wayne were trying to persuade the UNSC in any way to take action at this time on South Sudan?
Well, they want the support of the council behind the political process. They want the council to be pressure the parties, the stakeholders in the region so that they will bend. But as the U.S. Deputy Ambassador Michelle Sasson pointed out, the council has been sitting around waiting for, you know, ages for the parties to get serious about peace and that they've made many promises about allowing aid in and about ending the violence, and nothing has changed. And, you know, she spoke very strongly about it, and she said that, you know, she was outraged that the government is still asking aid groups to pay high fees to continue operating in the country to help the people. And she called for additional targeted sanctions and an arms embargo on South Sudan. Now, we've heard this call for an arms embargo for quite some time, and last year efforts to get one adopted in the council failed, and they failed badly because I think it was only about 7 of the 15 council members supported it. So that's a very big division in the council. It's not where one or two members need to be brought on board. It means 8 members need to be brought on board. So that's a big division in the council. And when you have a division like that, it sends a bad message to the stakeholders because then they know nobody's going to pressure them.
Right. So we're not talking just China and Russia anymore.
Exactly. Mm. When, you know, you usually have like one or two holdouts or veto holders such as Russia and China, but that's not the case.
That's Carol Van Dam speaking with VOA's UN correspondent Margaret Bashir in New York this past hour about a briefing at the UN Security Council this morning by JMAC Chairman Festus Mohai and Assistant Secretary General for Peacekeeping Operations Al-Ghassim Wani. Health officials in Yei River State say continued fighting between government and rebel forces is preventing health workers from vaccinating tens of thousands of children against life-threatening diseases. Since the conflict spread to the state last year, health agencies have run into trouble carrying out routine vaccinations. Daniel Martin Friday reports for VOA that UN workers are running a 3-day vaccination campaign in Yei Town.
Thousands of children and childbearing age mothers line up at the Emmanuel Cathedral in Yei Town to receive oral drops and injections of vaccine to protect them against polio, measles and tetanus. Regan Tongo is one of the health workers providing 3 different types of vaccines to area children.
For TT, we are giving for pregnant mothers. TT, we are vaccinating from the right hand upper side. Then we have the polio is given for children from 0 to 5 years. That one we are giving it just 2 drops only to the mouth. Then one of the measles we are giving to children from 6 years to 15 years. Also, measles is vaccinated for the children for upper right hand middle.
The UN's Children Agency, UNICEF, and the World Health Organization are conducting this week's vaccination campaign against polio, measles, and tetanus for children and childbearing women trapped inside Ye Town. Higma Caroline, a mother of two, says she is relieved and her children got vaccinated yesterday.
I'm so happy so that my children will live so healthy. So my message to the parents outside there, they should bring their children so that their children will get vaccination, so they will even live healthy and they will be prevented from the killer diseases like polio and measles.
Nicholas Hakim walked from Pokuka village, 8 kilometers from Ye Town, to get his four children vaccinated. He says hundreds of children in his village have not been vaccinated. Speaking in Arabic, Hakim says children trapped in villages due to insecurity have no access to basic healthcare services such as vaccination. Speaking in Arabic, Ye mother Victoria Tabu says she brought her 3-year-old child son to get the polio and tetanus vaccines and encourages other Ye parents to do the same. UNICEF's emergency response specialist Anthony Lasuba says this week's vaccination campaign aims to reach 20,000 children under the age of 5 in and around Ye.
It is still a threat. We are still continuing with the campaigns. So still the coverage of vaccination very poor actually in the states that are affected by the war. So because of that, children are missing out.
Those missing out due to insecurity include thousands of children in Kajokeji, Lanya, Morobo and other parts of Ye River State. Michael Lugala, director of Ye County's Health Department, is calling on government and rebel forces to open all roads in and around Ye so that health workers can access rural populations.
Not because we have no drugs or vaccines to reach them, but there is no road. Otherwise, we are ready to, you know, to go and give services to them. So I'm asking the government to open the road so that these people who nearby the villages, they can come to the town and get the service.
Rogala says once the roads are open again, health workers can travel to other parts to vaccinate children against life-threatening diseases. Lasuba says polio still remains a threat to thousands of children in Ye River State's conflict-affected areas. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Ye.
Still on health matters, funeral services were held yesterday for the first black woman in South Africa to publicly declare she was HIV positive. Prudence Mabele, president of Society for Women and AIDS in Africa and co-founder of the Treatment Action Campaign, died last week of pneumonia. She was 46. Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa spoke during a church service in Randburg, describing Mabele as fearless and steadfast. He said her fight was not just for rights of people living with HIV, but for the rights, dignity and well-being of every person who suffered discrimination, oppression, stigmatization, exploitation. For more on Life of Prudence, VOA's Joe DiCapua spoke with reporter Delia Robertson in Johannesburg.
She was the kind of person who was open, honest, and was one of the very first women in South Africa to come out and declare that she was HIV positive. That was as early as 1992. You know, she was always at the forefront of people who were fighting AIDS, trying to prevent its spread, fighting for treatment and so on, right from those early days, even before we had a democratic government in South Africa. She was so open, so honest, so insistent. You know, people couldn't refuse to ignore her.
Take us back to 1992 in South Africa and what it was like for a young woman to come out publicly to say she was HIV positive.
Well, in 1992, the negotiations for the democratic South Africa that was to come was underway. The government of the time, the National Party government, had pretty much ignored HIV, and people in South Africa were really unaware of the extent of the growing pandemic within society. But it was people like Prudence who realized that there were many people who had HIV and was one of the first to speak out, as I said. And then, of course, in the immediate aftermath of democracy in South Africa, once again the issue fell by the wayside because there was just so much else going on and so much change was happening in society and so much needed to be done, and there were so many demands on the government for education, for health and that sort of thing, that it somewhat slipped through the cracks. And so people who had HIV struggled to get treatment. Some people got treatment, but very few in those days.
Now, she died fairly young, 46, and she succumbed to pneumonia, which is one of the opportunistic infections that attack people who are infected with HIV. But we have the antiretroviral drugs now. So could you talk a little bit about her illness? Had she been ill for a while?
No, I think it was fairly sudden, and she had been on HIV treatment. As soon as it became available in the public health system, she started taking ARVs and believed in them. And I think the kind of person she was most likely very consistent in taking her medication. But who knows, given the period of time when she first was diagnosed until she was treated, who knows, you know, what might have happened to her general state of health at that time. The kind of pneumonia you can get with HIV can be very devastating and have a very potent effect on the body. So maybe she was just one of the unlucky ones who, even though she was on ARVs, even though she was following the requirements for taking the medication and so on, maybe this time, you know, she just got too sick.
Now, Mabele was also president of the Society for Women and AIDS in Africa. How have conditions improved for women in South Africa, those infected with HIV, because of her work?
Her activism and those of others that she worked with were instrumental in bringing about treatment within the South African public health system to people who couldn't afford drugs anywhere else. And if it wasn't for people like Prudence Mabele, this would probably not have come about.
That was reporter Dahlia Robertson from Johannesburg. She spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua. South Sudan robotics team won a gold medal in the robotics competition held in Washington this week. The South Sudan robotic team was founded in February by Kwach Mayur and Samuel Garang Akau of University of Juba School of Public Service and Youth Empowerment Networks. Kwach is being assisted in the robotics work by Richard Ring Kwach, who is a professional in computer engineering. The South Sudan team says it takes advancement of science and technology as tool of solving their critical problems such as conflict, food security, water and health issues, among others in their country. The team is grateful to FAST Global for giving them an opportunity to participate in the FAST Global Robotics Competition held this week here in Washington, D.C. And that brings us to the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Ugandan Girls by Jose Chameleon. Chameleon in a Davido, Paribara, it's how we go. Color the girls, color the girls, Davido, this is your color the girls. All of my guys, all of your girls, come to my place where you let us be late. We do it now, Bangolo, all of the girls want to Bangolo. I'm coming to you. Baby, 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 oh, baby, now we be to go. I can never leave you lonely. Baby girl, come be my homie, and I'll take you far away. Baby girl, what you desire? Baby, you be hot like fire. It is your love that make me tired. All my lele ladies, put this song on your playlist. I don't want you, you want it. Everybody, you want it. Bulu buku she ave kuba. All of the girls, all of the girls, baby, don't they so you call all the girls. All of my guys, all of your girls, come to my place, so yeah, let us relate. We do it now, Bangolo. All of the girls want to Bangolo. We've been listening to Jose Chameleon with the song Ugandan Girls. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Let us know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. That's southsudan@voanews.com. Or you can leave us a message on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. We hope you can join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
I really mean it, I need you even just a minute. Shh. Come on, don't tell nobody that you put me on.